Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Deanna Meyer. She's a longtime activist and organic farmer currently residing in Colorado. She graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks with degrees in anthropology and English and went on to acquire a teaching certificate. Recently, she's been involved in advocating for the forests in her area as well as the rapidly disappearing prairie dogs throughout the Midwest. She's a member of Deep Green Resistance on Wildlands Defense and believes the strategies and tactics of people who care about the living planet must shift from asking nicely to defending those they love by any and all means necessary. So first, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your work as well.
Thanks. So let's talk about prairie dogs in general, and then from there, let's go to how you got involved in your prairie dog defense work.
All right.
And so you live in Colorado, and can you talk about what do you know about how prairie dogs were prior to the invasion of the dominant culture?
Yeah, I think that's real important, too, because most people just don't think about that. But I believe from all the documents and Lewis and Clark and all the explorers that were here, and even the time when I was growing up till now, that the prairie dogs were on every square inch of our prairies, and they're an extremely important keystone species in which about 200 other species depend on for the healthy communities in which they live. And there were perhaps billions, I would say, of prairie dogs everywhere across the West, and they were just everywhere supporting a wide, wide variety of different animals. And it's really hard for anybody to imagine that right now because it's so radically different. And their behaviors probably have become radically different and everything when they've had to see and witness all of the destruction that's happened to their homes and to who they used to be. And right now there are very few of the prairie dogs left, and it's actually quite sad to think about that. I think that's really hard for most people to come to grips with, because what we often hear when we talk about prairie dogs from everyone is, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. Why are you worried? And it makes me so angry to hear that, because there are very few, and the colonies that we do see are just smashed into these little corners. Oftentimes you'll see them in the middle of medians in the road. When you go to the airport, you'll see a lot of them in those situations, which to me is heartbreaking. And you'll also see them just shoved in little tiny corners that haven't been developed yet on the prairies. So little areas, you'll see them just trying to their darndest to live in those areas. And people don't understand when they make a statement like that how many there used to be and how integral and important they were for a functioning community of life.
You know, you mentioned the median strip, and that's one of the things also that breaks my heart about prairie dogs is there are some creatures who are so very specifically evolved to fit a very, very, very tight niche. And if, you know, the water table goes up by a foot or goes down by a foot, this creature could go extinct. But prairie dogs, for me, are an example of how incredibly destructive this culture is, because they are so forgiving, and yet they still have had their population reduced by 99%. I mean, when they can live in highway median strips and still the population's been reduced by 98 to 99%, that lets you know that something's really, really wrong.
Yeah, definitely. It's really scary to see that. And just even thinking of them being so resilient in those strips, and how people continually, like a prairie dog colony that I was fighting for a little bit ago, and they went and did poison it. When I talked to the developer, he's like, well, we've been killing prairie dogs there for, you know, 60 years they have. You know, so they go in there and poison them 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 over and over, and then you have these little pockets that survive from the poisonings. Then they come up, and then they are able to build up a population again, and then they're hit as soon as it gets to be relatively functioning. They come in and poison them again, and this just happens over and over until they're just gone. And you're right. I mean, that, I think about that all the time, and I wish people would think more about that with everything, because people just don't know what was here, and they see these little tiny colonies smashed, and then all of a sudden their images says, oh, they're everywhere. But to think about what they were and then the situation that they're in, I mean, how fun or how upsetting must it be? And when I've watched the prairie dogs in medians or in areas right next to the road, even with the mall situation this last year in Castle Rock, they are horrified. And when I'd sit and watch them, I would feel like I was watching a concentration camp kind of situation, because they were sitting there when cars would come by and their families were flattened on the road, and they just seemed very agitated. And then if you go to an area where there isn't that kind of noise and vibrations and destruction, they have a lot more prairie lands, they behave completely differently. So it's just kind of like us, how we can become tortured living around all these different noises and things that aren't of the real world, and drive ourselves kind of insane. I believe that that happens with those prairie dogs as well. So when I see them just barely holding on, surviving in those little pockets, and that's really all we have left. We don't have any of these continuous huge colonies that they used to exist in, which is also very scary when you think about the biological diversity that's necessary to really maintain a healthy population of prairie dogs. And that's gone. They're completely fragmented. So although they're extremely, like you said, resilient, they're also getting to the point where that resiliency could go away rather rapidly, because they just don't have the colonies and the diversity that they used to have. They even have prairie dogs used to, every spring in June and July, prairie dogs, the males have to leave their colonies, certain, not all of them, but certain amounts, and they're biologically driven to do this because they used to have colonies everywhere. And for the biological integrity of the colonies, they needed to leave and spread their genetic diversity to different areas. And now you see these poor prairie dogs, and I saw this a lot this spring when I was really paying attention in summer. They go and they have nowhere to go. They have no colonies to extend out to. So they end up, you'll see one lone male prairie dog digging a hole somewhere, hoping that somebody will come join him, where before he would be welcomed into a much larger community. And so that's also really hard to watch.
That's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I want to tell one anecdote and then go from there to your story. And the anecdote is, I grew up in Boulder, and an important moment in my development in how much I hate this culture was, there used to be, I don't know how well you know Boulder, but there's the Boulder Denver Turnpike turns into 28th Street, and just west of that is the University of Colorado. And there is now a parking lot just west of 28th. It's a parking lot for the university. And when I was growing up, that parking lot was not a parking lot. That was a huge, huge for now, prairie dog colony. And that was taken out, I don't know what year, but they definitely destroyed it. And that was a one moment in my understanding that this culture kills everything. I mean, these prairie dogs were living right next to a busy road, and yet they had to make room for what? For a parking lot. And, you know, that was about the time of the old line about pave over paradise and put up a parking lot. So it's just incessant. And of course, any listener to this can transpose this to wherever they live, whether it's, you know, a marsh that is drained or a river that's dammed or whatever it is. I mean, this is just incessant. And speaking of incessant, let's talk about how you became involved in the prairie dog issue there.
Well, like you were saying too, when I was young, I had remembered that there was just prairie dogs everywhere, and we used to ride horses all the time, and by golly, they never broke their legs or anything, but we would see prairie dogs everywhere, and my mom really did think they were the cutest animal, and she'd always, oh, they're so beautiful, and I was really interested and loved them too. I'm like, they're just a really fun animal to watch. And you could sit there and watch them for hours, and they're just an amazing, you know, creature in all different kinds of ways. But I started noticing more and more that they just kept disappearing. And of course, we lived around ranchers. Douglas County was a big ranching community. Now it's just a big, I don't know what you want to call it, consumer community. But they just kept disappearing. And this one particular colony that I had seen off of where we live, it's Daniels Park Road, there was this very large, in the same way you're saying, four, in terms of now, colony there that I used to love to watch. And I drive by it and always with my son and look at them and pull over and watch these prairie dogs. And all of a sudden one day I looked out there when I drove by and they were gone. Nobody was out there. And I pulled over and watched for a long time, and I started getting really sad and noticed that the holes were buried or were packed over, and that there was just nobody left. And then eventually, when I went back there by it, like a week later, they had big tractors plowing over the whole land and destroying all the soils and everything as well. And then they just kind of left it. So they weren't building anything there. They just destroyed the prairie dogs, planted some grasses after they did it. And now that prairie dog colony is starting to come back slowly. I'd say there's maybe about 20 that survived out of thousands. So they're out there now. And I got really concerned about this one area, which was where they were going to build this huge mall. So I went and called the town of Calthrop because I thought, my gosh, they just killed these, and I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't on the ball. I didn't ever inquire as to what might happen to them. But I bet they had started building in that area in the last 20 years. And they did say, yes, there is a development that's going to be up there, and it's going to be a mall. But it's not going to happen for a couple of years. So I kind of, to my fault, kind of sat back and said, okay, well, I have a couple of years, and maybe in a year from now we'll start looking at what we can do. And I asked them, what can we do about these prairie dogs? And they're like, well, you know, you have to find a place for them, and or the developers would have to find a place, but most likely they'll probably just end up killing them. So as the time got closer, actually 4 months later, not 2 years later, a big article came out in the paper that said that the nation's largest mall was just approved in Calthrop. And I knew exactly where it was going to go. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, the largest, the one thing, the largest shopping, you know, they said the largest mall in the nation. And I got into contact with different organizations and you, and was wondering what we could do to stop this or to save those prairie dogs. And then in the time of finding that out, I also found out that it was indeed one of the largest prairie dog colonies left on the Front Range. There's thousands of burrows out there, and the prairie dogs had been there for a long time. And I remember seeing all those prairie dogs when I was a little girl in that area. So anyway, we just started fighting for it. And everybody that I had contacted in Colorado that had worked with prairie dog issues told me, oh, that's so sad. They kill them all the time, though there's really not much you can do unless you can find a private owner, blah, 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 all these different things because of all these laws. So then you got me into contact with Wildlands Defense, and they said, let's save those prairie dogs. So we just started mounting a campaign, and it actually ended up being pretty successful. Lots of people ended up caring, and I didn't think that they would, but a lot of people did, and we got good press with articles. And we just started really fighting as hard as we could for the prairie dogs, really filming them a lot and showing the world how what characters the prairie dogs are. I mean, my first video that I took from them, you could see them yawning and stretching and rolling and playing and jump yipping and kissing. And they're just a really amazing animal and very photographic, too. And we all just started really gaining supporters for the campaign. And I think it helped, too, because we're going to build a mall on top of this, one of the last large colonies left on the Front Range. And I think most people would at least, we're kind of on our side there because not very many people want these malls. They're not successful, and, you know, Calthrop is a smaller town or was, and people didn't want to see that growth. So we just did a bunch of different things. We started pushing on the council, the Calthrop Town Council, and going to all the meetings, asking them to relocate. And they wouldn't listen, which is pretty typical. And then we would just start, we mounted more and more pressure, and we pulled, they approved the mall development. We were asking them not to and to hold off so that we could move the prairie dogs. They wouldn't do it, so we decided to do a referendum process so that they wouldn't be the ones who made the decision, so that we could put it up for a vote and hopefully postpone the destruction of the prairie dogs. But as time went on, they did start to kill them all as soon as they got a few warm days, and they started using a horrible poison on them, which they typically use with prairie dogs, that causes them to bleed out for 2 to 7 days. You did a lot of research on that. It's phosphine gas that they use on them, and they bleed from the inside out. And they killed probably 80 to 90% of the colony using that gas with everybody standing by. And luckily, throughout the whole campaign, we did have Fox News, amazingly enough, on our side, and they really helped film the whole story. And that brought a lot of pressure back on to the developer, and he did stop at the last 2 days of killing, so he did leave a little tiny segment untouched. And this one thing after another happened. We started forcing the Colorado Parks and Wildlife to approve my place to put the prairie dogs on. They refused to do it before, but with all the pressure, they ended up approving it. And then we were able in the long run, after all of the strings that we pulled and how hard we fought, to get the remaining survivors, which were ended up being hundreds of prairie dogs, up here. So a bunch of them were saved, and now they're up here, and we kind of just brought a lot of publicity to the whole issue of the prairie dogs, and we continue to go and bring publicity to the various colonies that they're actively killing right now.
So before we go on about that, I want to back up, and I will be happy to praise you. You don't have to praise yourself unless you want to. That I want to point this out for listeners to show that the big difference is not between people who blow stuff up and people who don't. The difference is between people who do something and who don't do something. So this entire thing, this entire campaign, am I correct in saying this entire campaign would not have happened had you not stopped and seen what they were doing? And then in addition, not just gone, well, that's a shame, but actually decided to do something about it?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And so before we go on, what can you say to people to encourage them to get off their butts and do something for whatever is under assault where they live?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first started and was talking with you about this colony and other people, it was you weren't discouraging, but most of the groups that had fought for prairie dogs were very discouraging. But we kept trying to find somebody, and luckily I did get connected with somebody in Wildlands Defense, in fact, to say, no, we're going to save these prairie dogs. But it was so important to continue to move because, like you said, if we didn't do anything, they would have all been dead. And now, in the last 2 years, there was one prairie dog colony that made the news that was killed, and or that was going to be killed, and they did end up relocating that. But since this colony happened in Castle Rock, there have been about 15 news stories since, and on prairie dogs, and people are talking about them a lot more, and it's really starting to help. And I would just say, with what I did too, I mean, I also went out. They put up a bunch of traps to capture these prairie dogs, and now I'm going to be going to court for that. But I went out and I saw all the traps standing there, and I could not sit there and let those traps sit there. And I went out and started smashing them all, and then the news showed up in the middle of me doing it. And I would say, for anyone, no matter what it is you choose to do, defend what you love, because we're at the end of what we love's existence. I think no matter what we look at, and if we don't start shifting tactics and stop wringing our hands and go, oh, darn, what a shame, we're all so crazy, what's wrong, why are we doing this, and instead of saying, who's doing it, why are they doing it, let's attack them, whatever way we can, let's try to stop them, what can we do, what are the different strategies we have here, let's put them all in place at once. And that's really what we did with this mall, is that we took everything we could and we attacked them. We got stores to pull out of the mall that refused. They were anchor stores, like Costco was going to build there, Whole Foods was going to build there. They pulled out. And that was a huge blow to the developer. We put the developer really over a barrel because of the, you know, unethical decisions he made. And they refused to postpone building that mall under any circumstances. And he told me that. When I talked to him once, he said, absolutely, I will not postpone this. And I told him, I said, you know what? You just made a big mistake. You're going to regret that you ever got involved in this mall thing, and I'm going to make you suffer. I was just angry, you know, when I talked to him. And it will be postponed. And, of course, when I hung up, I'm like, geez, I wish that was true. And it was, because they did have to postpone the building of the mall until August, because they had to allow us to remove the living prairie dogs before they could grade any of that land, and they were going to grade in February. So I would tell anybody, no matter what, don't let people tell you can't be done. And that's what I thought at first. I did the wringing hand thing too. And before I heard from Wildlands Defense, I was about done then. Like, there's really nothing I can do. I'm just going to be able to stand by and watch this colony die, because A, nobody cares about prairie dogs. B, nobody's going to do, there's nothing I can do because the law's against me. And, you know, so I was about ready to say, forget it, you know, care about this colony. It's going to be really sad to watch it go, but there's nothing I can do. But I would encourage anyone, you know, anywhere to do whatever you can and whatever your gifts are, whatever you know you can do, look into the situation and do whatever it takes to try to save what it is that you're fighting for and to not let anybody tell you it can't be done. Because if I would have listened to the first 10 groups I talked to, I would have thought that nothing could have been done, and I almost did go that route.
So it sounds like what you're saying is if there is something terrible going on and you want to stop it, then, you know, it can be very difficult to do it by oneself. So one can call an organization, and if you get bad news from that organization, just keep trying others until you get somebody who feels the same fire you do and who will help.
Yeah. And I think the hardest problem really and the biggest challenge probably in the whole, and still is now, is that a lot of these larger environmental organizations are much more concerned about being able to function as a big organization, and that requires money, than they are, and they are not willing to become adversarial because of those reasons, and they're much more interested in mitigation or money that they can get from the developers, which happened with us, because the group we were initially working with said, hey, you know what, they're going to kill those. We've tried. We came in and we tried to help you. There's no way he's not going to kill these prairie dogs. So can we at least get money from him for once he kills the prairie dogs? And we are like, with Wildlands Defense too, it's like blood money. There's no way these prairie dogs are still alive. And we are not going to negotiate their lives to make the developer look better. So, you know, you could offer the developer and say, listen, I know you have to kill all the prairie dogs, but can you give us some money so we can buy land later on so that if this situation happens again, we'll at least have somewhere to put the prairie dogs? And that's the strategy that a lot of these organizations use. And so, I mean, I think, too, it's like a matter of going to more grassroots levels of organizing and getting those, like, Wildlands Defense or Deep Green Resistance and getting people involved so that you can mount a campaign where you can really get people caring and who are willing to just do what it takes to try to save what it is that we love and not to negotiate. And that was a big help with Wildlands Defense, too, because at first you hear that, you're like, well, yeah, they're going to kill all of them, so maybe we should just try to get money so that we could have land so later on we could save them. But the fact of the matter is these animals are still alive, and there's no negotiating with the killer. I'm not going to say to the killer, well, gee, we can make you look a lot better if you just give me $100,000. You know, and so that was never, because of who I was working with, that was never an option and would never have been. And there was no way to negotiate. And because of that, we saved hundreds of lives. And we also mounted a huge campaign. And we also got the prairie dogs on the, you know, on the front page of many different, you know, papers and thinking about, like, what this issue actually is and people really looking at, you know, prairie dogs maybe they really aren't a nuisance. Maybe they aren't really a pest. Maybe there's something more to them. And that conversation wasn't happening before this, you know, and to the level it is now.
So, you know, there is historically and still governmentally a lot of completely insane hatred of prairie dogs. And, but it seems to me also, let me know if this is true, that you found that among many regular people, as opposed to county commissioners, that there exists a great well of love for prairie dogs too among people there. Is that not true?
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, and you see both of it, and it's like it's getting thrown into it still now. I mean, you just see the deep hatred on one side of this animal, and it's completely unfounded. And you hear it over and over. Oh, they're dirty. They're rodents. They bring the plague. And now that I've heard in the past couple of weeks over and over with repeated, like, I mean, this is the first time I heard this over and over, but they're starting to use the whole, you know, people break their legs in the holes. So you're really, if you have prairie dogs around, you're putting people at risk of breaking their legs because it's very dangerous. Not only will they break their leg, they'll probably get the plague when they break their leg as well, you know. And, of course, all of these myths, they are total myths. I've never heard of anybody breaking a leg in a prairie dog hole, and I believe that if they did, they need to stop drinking or they need to – they're big. They're really hard to miss, just like a horse. My horse is now – we put the prairie dogs all around our horses. They love grazing right next to the prairie dogs. They've never been used to prairie dogs, and they've never gotten close to stepping in a hole. And in fact, the prairie dogs have dug burrows all around the barn and all in their little inner pastures, and there's not a problem at all. And I have a hard time believing there ever is. There's never been a documented case of it. And then on the same hand, you'll see people who really love them. There are people who've been watching. Anybody who sits down and watches a prairie dog colony without hatred and without myths running the way that they look at them, I would have a very hard time understanding how you couldn't love the prairie dog. They like certain prairie dogs. They're their friends. They're their buddies. They dislike other ones. They hug. They kiss. They are rolling and jumping, and they talk. And when you watch them for long enough, you can start hearing the differences in their calls, and you can tell what is coming. Like, they have a specific bark for a golden eagle that I've been seeing a lot around here now. They have a different bark for a coyote. And my dogs are super attuned to it now, too. When they hear them bark, they run out because they know they're going to see a fox or they know they're going to see a coyote or whatever. And they are very – I think that's probably the most heartbreaking thing for people who love the prairie dogs, too, is when you start to get to know them as any animal, as any living being that's a sentient being. The prairie dogs love each other, and they have every amount of feeling. They love their lives just as much as you love yours. And I love mine. And when you think about what they do, and every day in Colorado, we're losing hundreds of colonies a day by people throwing fumatoxin or aluminum phosphide, is what that is, down their holes, and they're suffering. And they're suffering in probably the worst way ever. I talked to somebody on the board of euthanasia about the fumatoxin, and he said it's completely not an accepted form of death, and it's one of the cruelest ways to make anybody, it would be one of the worst ways of dying. Any way of dying is bad. I would never recommend killing prairie dogs by any means. But to use this one that they use so readily in throughout Colorado is just appalling, that they could put these creatures through that, and these beautiful animals that, just like buffalo. Anybody you're going to watch for a long time, but the communal skills of the prairie dogs and just watching them is heartbreaking, and the more you do watch them, the more you love them.
So hasn't there been a recent, in part because of this groundswelling of support for stopping these killings, haven't there also been some successes? At least I know there have been some obvious failures. That's what environmentalism is based on, is we lose and we lose and we lose so often. But for example, or am I wrong on this, didn't Naropa Institute, wasn't it going to kill prairie dogs, and they've said that they won't, or did they, what happened with that?
Yeah, Naropa University, which was, it's supposed to be a Buddhist-inspired university, but they had talked about how they've tried for 4 years so hard to find a place to move these prairie dogs. Now they need to expand their buildings, so they had to file for a kill permit through Boulder County, because in Boulder City, if you're going to kill your prairie dogs, you need to file for a permit to do so because of the work of activists in the 90s. So they filed for this, and they were hoping that no one would find out, because legally they can't tell you who filed for the permits, but they did get exposed for being the ones who did file for that permit. And we did launch a campaign. We did a protest there. And then we did a petition, and the petition got over 130,000 signatures. And so we presented it to them, and then they still refused to withdraw the kill permit. And then they got more and more pressure from more and more people, and then finally they did withdraw the kill permit. So now they don't have any intention, as of now, to kill those prairie dogs, and they're trying to find a place again to try to put them. But it did stop them, and they would have certainly, they try to say, oh, they said a lot of silly things like, we filed the permit because we thought maybe someone would come forward with land if we did that, because they have like a period in Boulder. If somebody files for a kill permit, they publicly advertise it on the city site, and then in hopes, supposedly, of somebody to come forward and say, oh, guess what, I've got land for those prairie dogs. So they started saying, well, we just did it to see if anyone would come forward with land, but they didn't. So they wanted it. They were going to wait and keep the permit because they said they had 2 years to kill them with the permit, but because of all the pressure, they just had to pull it. I mean, and they were getting a lot of pressure from everyone. It was actually worked pretty good. The public did change their mind, and that's one of those rare occurrences just because of who they were and who they represent, that it did work well to get them to stop. And we've used the petition, we've used petitions a few times now, and I'm not saying that petitions work all that well, but they at least bring to the people that are considering this, they at least show them that a lot of people are concerned. Like we just did one with Murphy Creek, and we had about 90,000 people sign that one. And they didn't really care. They just said they're going to kill him, and now we're working on that again. But they haven't killed him yet, but they approved it. So it all depends on, like, who, but definitely in some cases, and depending on who's doing it, it certainly does make an impact.
And the Murphy Creek one is as many of them are, especially egregious. They're just basically there. They're just killing them for the hell of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody talked to the owner today of the land. There's a bunch of different people involved, but the owners that actually have the land, somebody got a hold of him today and asked him, you know, can you please reconsider why you're doing this? He's like, prairie dogs are terrible. They just break. They're going to break all the cow's legs. He goes, and then now if we allow them to live there, they're going to get on the golf course, which none of them have, and they're actually quite a ways away from the golf course. And none of the prairie dogs have made any burrows in the golf course. And if they did, they could be passively relocated. But he said it's very dangerous because if people are golfing and they step in one of their holes, they could break their leg. There we had it again from him. I was just, you know, okay. But they just have this field that they're living in. They're not bothering anybody. They're not planning on developing in the near future in that area. And they put out a big blast for their community, asking them if they thought they should kill the prairie dogs or not. And they did a survey, and the survey came back, like, I think 60% said kill and 40% said relocate. And then they discussed it for a little bit, and they decided to kill. Then we came and presented a bunch of options for them, and then they acted like they were maybe listening to us, and it was back and forth. Like they'd say, well, maybe, yeah, we might do that. Then they'd come back, and then finally at that meeting they said kill.
And you've talked about relocation many times. Obviously relocation is not the optimal. The optimal thing is to leave them the hell alone.
Right.
Doesn't Colorado also have some extraordinary barriers to relocation that make it far more difficult? I mean, let's say that I were a fabulously wealthy person who had, 10,000 acres of former farmland out by, I don't know, Sterling or somewhere in eastern Colorado, and I wanted to reintroduce prairie dogs to this area, there are a lot of bureaucratic/legal impediments to that are put in for reasons that seem to me primarily just hateful and spiteful.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Do you have
a law that just basically says that they cannot relocate prairie dogs across county lines without approval of the commissioners from the incoming county. So if you did that, you wouldn't have too much of a problem relocating prairie dogs within the county onto your land that people didn't want or were going to attempt to kill. But you would have an enormous problem if I wanted to put prairie dogs in Douglas County over there or any other county in the state. Would want to move those prairie dogs across the county lines. The commissioners never say yes. Never.
And I'm guessing, by the way, that a lot of these commissioners are exactly the same people who complain all the time about big government getting in their lives.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, that was a – they were not going to let us put the prairie dogs up here. And we're fighting with Boulder a lot, too, because they have this wonderful prairie dog policy. And it'll bring tears to your eyes. It's so beautiful, that Boulder one. And it's all talks about how they're a keystone species, how we need to preserve them, how we need to do this and that and the other. But they don't have any room to put them. And why don't they have any room to put them? Don't ask me, because when I called them the other day, they said there was 3,300 acres that they set aside, which is very minimal, for prairie dogs. And only 1,200 of those acres have prairie dogs on them, 1,200 to 1,400 right now. And I asked why that is, and they said, well, because there's no way we can't put prairie dogs on these lands unless the grass is in perfect shape and the plants. So we have to wait for the grasslands to come back and become really healthy before anybody gets on there, because if we do put the prairie dogs on them and the grass isn't perfect, well, then they might die. I mean, it's just, and all this stuff is crazy, because just like you said, prairie dogs are living in medians on the highway. They will survive on a big, wide open prairie.
Well,
and they will enhance the prairie.
Yeah, I was going to say, apart from which, that's really stupid anyway, because prairie dogs, not by themselves, but prairie dogs create the prairie. One of the reasons that your horses are hanging around the prairie dogs on your land is that the prairie dogs improve the quality of the grass. And I don't know if you heard it, but I interviewed hold on.
Was it Con or was it the last one?
Gerardo. Gerardo. Yeah. Gerardo Caballos.
Right.
And one of the things he was saying is that they were doing a study down there where they put GPS on cattle and ran the cattle in on a field, part of which included a prairie dog village, and the cattle ended up spend all their time in the prairie dog village because the grass tastes a lot better there.
Yeah.
And these, by the way, these cattle are not spending time around the prairie dog village because they've all broken their legs. I mean, it's just, you know, I was hearing that when I was a kid too, and I've known since I was 7 years old. We had, we had prairie dogs out on some land that we had, and we also had horses and cows. And we never, ever, I rode horses, you know, galloping across the prairie dog villages, and they never broke step. Not only did they not break legs, they didn't break step. But anyway, back to the original point, you know, that's crazy for them to say the grasses aren't there yet, because if they want to make the grasses better, bring the prairie dogs in, and that will increase the speed with which the grasses recover.
Right. And if anything, even if you want to play into their crazy, I don't know what it, logic, you would be able to, there are lots of people who are very good at that, and in Boulder as well, in reseeding back to native grasses. So why not put the prairie dogs on there and reseed with the forbs and the grasses that promote prairie dogs and that prairie dogs traditionally were with, and restore the prairies back to what they were. And it's funny, when I asked them too, I said, well, the majority of the lands that they have designated on the prairies as open space, of course, have cows or monocrops on them. So I asked them why, you know, why is it okay? I mean, because we know that cows and corn and soy and what other monocrop you want to put on there are way more damaging to the habitat of a prairie than any prairie dog could ever be. And they said, well, that's because agriculture doesn't have any standards for rehabilitating the native lands.
Well, there you go.
So, because I called them to ask why they're killing, because they're killing, and they admitted to killing over 100 colonies on open space Boulder land this past year, just in Boulder County on open space lands. And we were asking, we did a call out to our supporters on Wildland Fence, why? We wanted to know why. And he said basically, well, the prairie dogs, there was two specific areas we were asking about. And he said, well, the prairie dogs who went on to this lake area, they actually came on to habitat that was non-prairie dog habitat. And I'm like, okay, so prairie dogs who find a place that they can survive and do well surviving, you're going to kill them because you've already designated it as non-prairie dog in the open space lands designations. He's like, well, yeah, that's kind of how it works. And I said, okay, but then the lands that are designated for prairie dogs, you won't put them there because the grasses aren't good enough for the prairie dogs yet. He said, well, yeah, that's kind of how it goes. And it was just really frustrating and crazy. And the second one was they just killed a bunch on a dam on a reservoir. And I said, well, what was up with that one? He said, well, they're going to damage the dam. They're going to damage the integrity of the dam. And I was like, well, you know, if that was true, no wonder I love them so much. But I don't believe that there's probably any evidence of that anywhere. And I have a hard time believing that prairie dogs would dig burrows on a steep incline dam wall. And he's like, well, you know, that's just, they could, he just kept going back to, well, yeah, they probably could, though, damage the integrity of the dam. I'm like, well, is there any instances of prairie dogs doing that? Because that's the second time I've heard that, too, in the past year where they've killed colonies, because there was another dam in Inglewood, and they said the same thing, that they had to kill that colony, because if they didn't, they would damage the wall and the dam could fail. So, I mean, this is just, no matter where you go, it's one excuse after another excuse. And what it really boils down to is that, you know, when you look at the whole root of the whole thing in those types of situations on open land, public lands, ranchers dominate public lands. And they don't want prairie dogs on their lands. They don't want wolves on their lands. They don't want coyotes. They don't want anything native. They want cows or their monocrops. And the policy, they determine policy. The ranchers do. They're hugely influential. So the biggest best bet for prairie dogs is that people really start forcing the issue and getting on board and understanding that public lands are public lands and that cows and monocrops and all these things that profit enormously at taxpayers' expense, these ranchers, shouldn't be on public lands because it's destroying the very, very small slivers of habitat that we have left for the native animals and creatures that used to live here. And if we continue to give it all over to cows, we're going to lose everything, including our own lives. And I hear that all the time, too. People are like, why do you care about prairie dogs? Why don't you care about our own species? Well, I mean, that's, of course, human supremacism, and it's disgusting in itself. But the true fact is, if that was true and you really did care about yourself and your own species, then you would recognize that killing everything alive and natural and in a healthy community is killing yourself. So maybe you should care more about your own species, you know?
Yeah. You know, the hatred on the part of the ranchers for all things natural and wild is completely insane. And in this case, it's especially insane because, once again, prairie dogs don't even hurt the cattle. I mean, they actually, once again, improve the range. So actually, if you were a smart rancher who was not, you know, mentally ill and wanting to kill every wild creature there is, you would actually encourage prairie dogs because they would actually improve the grazing for the cattle. It's just,
yes.
The whole thing is nuts. So I want to, we've got a couple minutes left. There's one little thing I want to comment on back about Boulder County, and then I want to sort of talk about how people can look to the model of what you've been doing to do in their own communities. And the one thing I want to say is that, you know, they were saying that the land isn't prepared yet for the prairie dogs and that the grasses aren't good enough. If you had a choice, you yourself personally had a choice between you and your family being poisoned in a way that would be painful for about a week and one of the most horrible ways to kill you, that's one choice. Or the other choice is that you are put into a new home, which is nice, but probably not your dream home and not quite ideal, and could be made into a dream home with a little bit of work by you. Which would you choose?
Well, exactly. Of course you're going to choose life.
I mean, the point is that argument that they can't put them there because it's not quite ready yet is ridiculous because they're going to be killed anyway.
And that's exactly what I told him when I was talking to him. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, it was the same situation up here when Colorado Parks and Wildlife came here, and they had 100 prairie dogs, roughly, in holding tanks that another company, relocation company, seriously botched bad. And they had been sitting in these tanks for a month. They ate all of their own babies. It was a terrible situation. These prairie dogs had been through hell. And 4 weeks of it. And Colorado Parks and Wildlife said, we're going to kill them all and give them to the ferrets now. And we were all, these were from the mall. And we said, no, you're not. you know, and we got this huge, everybody behind it, even the governor was calling them and said, don't do this, you know, put them up on this land. We were the land that I live on. I said, come on. And Colorado Parks and Wildlife said the same thing. They said, we do not want to put those prairie dogs up there if they won't survive. Why would we want to move them up there if they won't live? And it was the same thing, and I had said it when Fox News was up here. I said, that is insane. It's completely insane to say, hey, let's kill all these guys instead of giving them a chance. Is this the ideal situation for black-tailed prairie dogs where I live up here at a higher elevation? No. But is it possible that they will live here and thrive? Yes. So why would the choice be let's poison or let's gas them and feed them to a ferret program? I mean, it's all crazy. Even the black-footed ferret program is completely crazy because what the ferrets absolutely need in order to survive and not go extinct is large, healthy prairie dog colonies, period. Their diet is like 90 to 98% dependent on prairie dogs. And the only reason they're dying is because prairie dogs are. So what sense does it make to kill all these colonies and bring them to these ferrets that are in captivity and feed them? And I never understand that. And they do it, they talk about it all the time, about how they're going to protect the ferrets and let's kill the prairie dogs and feed them to the ferrets. I mean, I don't know how you can, what we need is thousands and thousands and thousands of acres chock full of prairie dogs. And we also have a huge problem, too, that prairie dogs are not only dying in huge numbers from developers and from the ranchers, but they're dying even, you know, in major. A major problem is the plague that was brought here by rats that the fleas contract. Prairie dogs have no immunity. They die within 2 days of contracting it. So you'll get these huge colonies that just die off. And we are rapidly losing it's less than 1% now of the historic range of prairie dogs is what's left. And people are just chewing through them because the policies allow that. They allow them to kill them. They're considered a nuisance, which almost obligates people to kill them.
Oh, in some states, Kansas, your landowners are required to kill prairie dogs.
Yeah. Yes, these last remaining prairie dogs. And it's all so crazy because it's like everybody will sit here, even on the Murphy Creek website or Facebook page, they have a picture of a hawk, a red-tailed hawk. Oh, what a beautiful hawk. That hawk eats the prairie dogs you're about to kill. I mean, you're probably going to kill that hawk because when they eat a prairie dog that has phosphine gas in its stomach, I mean, vets get, when they have dogs that they bring dogs to vets that have eaten animals, whatever's dying in the holes, whether it's prairie dogs, rats, whatever, that they're killing with the phosphine gas. And when the dogs come to the vets, and the vets, if they throw up, the vets get extremely sick. And some of them have gotten sick for a week or more because they inhaled the phosphine. That's how horrible this stuff is. And none of it makes sense.
So we have like 1 minute left, and I want you to do two things in 1 minute. One is tell us how the prairie dogs are doing at your place, and the other is what can people who live elsewhere in the world do to replicate what you have done and begin fighting like hell for wherever they live?
Well, the prairie dogs are doing really well. When they got up here, they've doubled their weight. We have a lot of snow right now, so a lot of them are sleeping. They go into torpor. So we'll see when it starts getting a little bit warmer how they're doing at that time. But they did really well when they came up here, much better than they were doing down there. And
when will they start having babies? Because right now, obviously, the population's decreasing because eagles, hawks, you know, you had a certain number, and it's going down until they have babies. When will they have babies?
They'll have babies between March and June.
Okay, let me know how it goes.
And
now the second part of the question.
Yeah, I think love whatever you love with all your heart and defend them with whatever you have. And that's the same thing with me. I mean, we can't be scared anymore. We're down to the last little slivers of what we have left that's worth living, you know, and without them, we're not going to do so well either. And I would just say do whatever you can, contact different Wildlands Defense, contact Deep Green Resistance, contact organizations who are doing things differently because what we've been doing as an environmental group of people who are concerned since the 60s hasn't been working. And we really need to start changing our strategies and getting these things out and educating the public at what we're really losing. And the biggest thing, I think that I've told people too, is try everywhere you go, and you've helped me do this a lot too, look at where we are and think about what this must have looked like 200 years ago and think of what we've lost and then think how we can do something to make what the situation better and to try to start healing that land again. And the only way we can heal the land is to get the native inhabitants back on it and to quit destroying everything and extracting. And the only way we can do that is to fight like hell for what we have left.
Well, thank you so much, Deanna. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Deanna Meyer. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.